children. We're starting.
That's right.
Showtime. Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 73 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audio2.com. With me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, I'm recovering, Bruce. Yeah. Recovering. Yeah.
It was a big weekend, was it?
It was a huge weekend, a great weekend, don't get me wrong, because it was the photo weekend in Melbourne. So anybody who was anybody involved with the photographic industry in some shape, way, form was there at the Imaging Technology Expo in Melbourne here. And it was fabulous. It was really great.
Cool.
Total Image ran a little stand where we were just sort of explaining the magazine to people. I lectured to the Photo Marketing Association on Friday morning and then to the general public and with various photo tips three times consecutively on Sunday afternoon.
Wow.
And so Monday I was wiped, absolutely wiped out. But it was really encouraging. It was great that this year the Photo Imaging Council of Australia and the Photo Marketing Association decided that they would make the expo less exclusive. In years past, it's always been, it'll be for the industry only, and if anybody else happens to sort of get their head in, there's not a lot we can do about that. But this year, they actually encouraged punters to come, and I mean that expression in the most affectionate form. They encouraged enthusiasts and amateur photographers and family snappers, everybody to come, and that's why there was the Imaging Theater where I spoke, which was a theater set up in the expo where you could come and sit and listen to various photographers and other people like camera technicians, etc., speak. Apple were there presenting their Aperture. And Adobe were there talking about Photoshop and Lightroom. So it was great. There was a lot of interactive stuff. And cool. Probably next year in Sydney, it'll be even more interactive. And from my perspective, it's about time. I think all the expos should be about people, not the industry, we're here to make photography fun and easy and enjoyable. And so photography should be, less exclusive. Fear has always been attached to photography a lot because we've tried to sort of make it this, ooh, I'm so exclusive thing. And that shouldn't be the case. Photography should be fun and, accessible. So that's what this year was. And I'm really, really glad that they took that tack. And I met a few podcast listeners. They dropped by the stand. I put faces to names, and they put the face to a voice when came by and shook my hand and said how much they'd enjoyed the podcast.
Fantastic. So
that's really great.
You upstaged Guy Sebastian.
Well, Guy Sebastian is this year's celebrity photographer. Now, for those who don't live in Australia, Guy Sebastian was the first winner of Australian Idol, and he has since formulated a very successful career in music, both here and overseas. And he came down to a bit of a presentation and to sign some autographs as this year's celebrity photographer. And I was on straight after him. There was a huge crowd there when I turned up at the Imaging Theater with my laptop in hand, ready to go. And I thought, oh, well, when he goes, there'll be a mass exodus. But I learned as he left that actually, no, they weren't there for him at all. They wanted to save seats to hear my presentation, which was really nice. I mean, sure, he's good looking and young and can sing like an angel, but he can't take pictures like I can.
They were all there for the Lord of the Lens.
The Lord of the Lens, yes. The Sultan of the, what did you call me? I can't even remember anymore. I can't remember. One of the, I don't know whether it was you, Richard, or somebody, who else, who came by the stand? Richard Annable dropped by the stand and a couple of others, and I can't remember who it was, but he walked up to the stand and used these titles, hello, right. Shelton. Lens, prince of the whatever, filters, the whatever. I can't. Things you told me. I'm sad you ran out, but after 73 episodes, we had a great time. It was nice to actually meet some of the listeners and get their comments and feedback, and it was all very positive. So apparently, we'll have to keep the formula the same, which apparently, according to one of our listeners, is start the podcast, crap, 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 giggle, giggle, point about photography, a little bit more giggle, and then finish. It's apparently a winning combination.
Okay.
But just getting back to the show, it was really great to see all the new technologies. Not that I'm, you know, anybody who listens to this podcast knows that I'm not a big tech head, but it was nice to see all the latest stuff, handle the latest cameras, see that in Australia, at least, the photo industry is looking positive. It's gone through some really dark years, and, you know, economically and, you know, in terms of attitude and feeling, and it was really up this year. And it was really nice to see the emphasis is on output now. And that's what the photo industry is realizing, that, of course, it has to return to, is that once we've taken our picture, well, now what do we do with it? And Hewlett-Packard were there with their kiosks and their new printing services. And my wife, Kerry, made a book on the spot, which was incredible. Like a photo album style, coffee table type book. Yep. She took some photographs that we had, that she took in Argentina. And basically, you put your disc in or your card into the kiosk, the printer, and using their software, which is extremely intuitive and easy to use, you design a book. And then you say, yep, and it tells you how many pages it will be, what it will cost, gives you, you know, lots of different options for layout. You say, fine, bing, bing, bing. And then you come back an hour later and all your photographs are laid out for you, printed and bound in a book.
In an hour, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. That's awesome.
And so that kind of thing is going to be huge, because imagine you've gone away for a holiday, you take some family snaps, you think, well, I can either get them printed and then buy an album and put them all in the album, or I can go to this kiosk and it will do both at the same time
and cost
me less. It was very cheap. It was, so, you know.
Are these, like, full production kiosks going to be rolled out, like, nationwide? Or do you think they were just on display at the expo and that's pretty much the limit of it?
Well, I was told that 5 camera house stores in Australia here are already trialing them. The Melbourne store has already got them installed and is using them.
Is there one in Sydney?
I would suggest there would be. The camera house probably in Sydney would have them there. There were 5, so I imagine one of them.
Which company was it?
This is it's Hewlett-Packard. Have presented sort of an extension of their Snapfish thing, and I forget what they've actually called this, but basically it's a Hewlett-Packard program and kiosk, and it's inkjet based, because, you know, it prints out off there. They basically sell the large printers to the retailer, but you know, it's archival inkjet, and the quality is, well, without issue. So we were very impressed. It's a great way to photograph a wedding, a holiday, a trip overseas, a portfolio, anything, and say, here, there you go, there it is, come back, you know, you put your card in, bing, 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 you know, it's all touchscreen layouts and alterations and choices, and then in an hour, there's your book.
That's awesome.
I mean, if you were a photographer, and here's an idea, you're a photographer and you want to offer kickoff portfolios for a young model, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, you can take 100 photos, have them laid out immediately in an album, present her with a book, make a little bit of money, and she goes off and she's got pictures to show people, you know, bound in a book.
Yeah.
So it's different to, I don't know if anybody's here familiar with the Memento system or other sort of coffee table systems. It is different in that it's inkjet and it's a little simpler in its design and the cover, etc. But it's inexpensive, it's fast, it's high quality and very convenient. So that was one of the things that really took my attention, and I thought, well, what a great way for photo retailers to get back on board with what is happening, or what did happen with digital. Along came digital and everybody thought, oh, we don't need to make prints anymore. I don't know why we started thinking that, because you know, we as an industry, it was a stupid thing to do, because our profits have always been in the consumables, not in the technicals and the hardware. It's always been in the consumables, and that's how photo retailers have stayed alive. And then along came digital in the late 90s, and we said, let's do this. I mean, it was stupid from a financial perspective. It was ridiculous. We had to go digital because that's the way that the companies were pushing us, and even photo companies were pushing it. But retailers completely lost their way. And it was a very sad thing to see. But now, the whole issue, and there were stands, there was stand after stand after stand at the expo dedicated to different ways of outputting or printing your photographs. I've taken the picture. What do I do with it? Leave it sit on the hard drive and show people on my screen? No. Make books, make prints. This Hewlett-Packard thing, actually, my wife was putting this thing together, and fellow from Hewlett-Packard was giving her a hand and showing her how to use it, which she didn't need a lot of help with. It was very straightforward. But then afterward, what happens when you get to the end of laying out your book is that it says, well, now you've laid out a book, and that'll cost you $39.95, la, 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 la. But how do you feel about a montage poster? And it shows you your options. And it's a 24-inch by 36-inch poster.
Wow.
And it says, look, would you like one of these? You know, it'll cost you $19.99, and you choose your photos. It lays it out for you. Do you want this layout? Try it again. Layout. No, try it again. Try this layout. Oh, that's the way I want it. And then press print. And again, you come back in an hour. You've got a poster with a montage of images.
For $20.
Yeah, something like that. It was incredible. Yeah, just wonderful. And the good thing about it is that there's a nice profit margin in it for retailers. And that's a good thing because photo retailers need to stay alive. And for our sake, they need to stay alive. And all that is really, really positive news for the industry. And I'm really happy about it. Mm. So you see it in your local area, go in and use it. If not, ring Hewlett-Packard, ring your local Hewlett-Packard, wholesaler, distributor, outlet, wherever, whatever country you're in, and ask about this new, program or the printing program that they have. And, it just absolutely fabulous. Go and get something done because it really is worthwhile. And output is the key.
Funny you should be talking about, printing stuff again, because I was only yesterday in a specialty art framing store, and they do canvas photo prints.
Mm.
And I'm seriously considering getting one of my favorite shots that I took in Vanuatu last year printed on canvas, because I like the texture of canvas. It looks great.
Is it the one of the boys on the beach?
Yeah.
That's a great shot.
Yeah.
You should show everybody that shot. I'm really.
Have I not
really,
put that up?
I don't know. You showed me, but I that's a great shot. Everybody, go to the website and look at it. Bruce is going to put it up again.
Yeah, go back to around about May of 2006, people, and have a look at the show notes just after I came back from Vanuatu. I'm pretty sure I did post that image, but I'll check it out myself. And if I didn't put it up, I'll dig it out and put a copy of it up on the website. I'm very happy with that shot.
And you should get it printed. You should.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm very, very proud of you. Yes, my young Padawan, I am very proud of you.
Grasshopper.
Yes, Grasshopper. Very proud of you. It's really, really good. Really good shot. So, yes, output is the key. And you should get it printed. Mm. I would suggest, and we've spoken about this when we did Happy Snaps and on Shutter Zinc, that if your images are just sitting on your hard drive, they're doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Prints in this country are so cheap now. When I started in photo retail in 1980 at Fletcher's Photographics in Melbourne, in the heart of Melbourne, we had this brag boast going on that we could do prints for 29 cents. And this is 27 years ago. And now,
they're even cheaper.
They're even cheaper. In this country, you can get prints for 24 cents, 25 cents, and, 27
years later. Mate, I've seen 15 cents if you do them in bulk.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's incredible. And why we're not going and just going, print me 100 off my latest holiday. I mean, 100 prints, $15 if you're getting them at 15 cents. Even if you're getting them at 29 cents, $29 for 100 prints, it's cheap.
Yeah.
Or do what we just said, go down and get this book made. Pop into a camera house store where they're trialing this new system and just get it done. Just get it done, because it really is a great thing. You could use it for weddings, you could use it for a modeling portfolio, you could use it for a holiday photo album, you could use it just because these are the latest photos that you've taken over the last few weeks and you want to put them in an album. You could theme it, you can do anything you want. It's really, really great, and not expensive. So absolutely, just go and get it done. It was really, really good news.
Now, while you were there, did you happen to pose the question of any of the manufacturers about why we don't get ISO ratings lower than 100 on digital SLRs?
it was on my mind, and I just didn't get the chance. I was so busy. I was absolutely flat out. I had so many hats to wear at the expo that I didn't get a chance. So, listeners, please stick with me. I am going to pick some brains. Unless, of course, Bruce, you've come up.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, it's interesting because someone sent one of our listeners sent me an email link. They sent me an email with a link to a, I guess you'd call it a blog, called thedigitaljournalist.org.
Right.
And a guy called Chuck Westfall, and this was only posted this month as well. And the listener question was, maximum ISO settings always grow higher and higher, 800, 1600, 3200, and now 6400, with the Canon EOS 1D Mark III. Mm. As far as I understand it, it's done by amplifying the nominal signal provided by the sensor. But is there a technical reason why Canon DSLRs have a minimum in-camera ISO setting of 100? If not, could in-camera ISO settings like 12, 25, and 50 be added as additional choices? In other words, is it possible to downplify, horrible choice of word, but the sensor signal? This feature would be very helpful to replace the use of various neutral density filters in order to obtain long exposure time in bright light situations, and if still possible, to increase noise performance. So it was exactly what I was asking you a week ago. Mm. And his response was, there's a lot more to high ISO ratings on digital cameras than signal amplification alone, but the drive towards image quality improvement has led to some remarkable accomplishments recently. The EOS 1D Mark III is a good case in point, with greater maximum sensitivity and better tonal gradation than any previous Canon digital camera. The same degree of sensitivity that makes it possible to achieve amazingly good image quality at high ISO ratings on the EOS digital SLRs makes it difficult, if not impossible, to maintain adequate levels of image quality with these cameras when ISO settings are reduced past a certain point. That's because, unlike traditional film emulsions, which can be made with smaller silver halide particles to reduce sensitivity, today's digital image sensors feature individual photodiodes whose size is fixed and therefore cannot be freely enlarged or reduced. Even if the size of an individual photodiode were somehow adjustable, smaller photodiodes would not necessarily be desirable because of issues with degraded signal-to-noise ratios.
Yes.
Under the circumstances, the use of ND filters on your lens is still the best available solution to achieve lower ISO speed settings on your digital SLR while maintaining maximum tonal range.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's technically possible to provide ISO settings lower than 100 with modern digital SLRs. In fact, Canon offers ISO 50 as an optional setting with all current EOS models above the Rebel series. The extended dynamic range of current Canon CMOS sensors makes it possible to simulate ISO 50 by changing the processing of the sensor data, but exposure latitude in highlight areas of the image is less at this setting than at higher ISOs.
Mm.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Well, there you go. There you go.
So, I guess that answers my question.
There you go. Well, it certainly is interesting. And what it does is it tells us that even though we live in the digital age, there is still a need for filters. Because a neutral density. And I raise this because I'm giving a lecture this coming Friday, tomorrow. Because we're recording here Thursday at Michael's Camera and Video in Melbourne, and Koken here in Australia, distributed by Maxwell's, have asked me to do this because there is this misunderstanding that now that we're in the digital age, we don't need filters. And we've spoken about this on the podcast, so you know we won't go into detail. But they asked me to actually put together a DVD before the expo that they could play at the expo that highlighted the use of filters and why. So I did. I put together a slideshow and burnt it to DVD, and they loved it. They played it, you know, for the 3 days, just rotated it, looped it for 3 days, and said it went down really well. And to their surprise, it was, you know, people were showing interest in filters in a way that they hadn't before because they hadn't thought that, you know, we need them. We're in the digital age, so we take our picture and we fix it in Photoshop or PaintShop Pro. But, you know, I mean, all digital is a different kind of film, really. I mean, if you want to be, you know, really straightforward about it. So that's why we've really talked about creating the image in camera. So, yes, get a neutral density filter to minimize your depth of field in certain situations, or to, you know, get to achieve longer shutter speeds. Get all sorts of other filters while you're there, because we still need them. But I thought we should continue just a little bit on our subject of light. If that's all right with you, Bruce, we can do that. We still got time.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know that's why probably people have tuned in this week, because that's what I said we'd do, and here we are talking about everything else. But of course, that's our formula.
That's
it. Crap on for a little while, get to the point, crap on for a little while afterwards, have a giggle and end. All right, that's the formula. So there you go. No, we should really get to the point, shouldn't
crap
we?
Crap tip, crap end.
Yes, crap tip, crap end, yes. No, giggle, no, crap tip.
Right.
Crap, giggle, and
right.
So that's our formula. Seems to work. It's making me a million so far. So you are a millionaire now, aren't you, Bruce, with this podcast?
No.
Okay. All right. Beautiful. All right. Well, am I taking all the money from this business, am I? All right. Good. I just wanted to go on to talk about, we talked about how light reveals shape, reveals form, reveals texture and emotion. And so I thought that we would just basically, talk about these things because, and dedicate our podcast to each of these things just briefly, because what I really want our listeners to do is go out and try it. Over the next few weeks, look at how light reveals shape, form, texture, emotion, dimension. I want to, and I want them to really study that, because it is the tool we use, as we've said, to create our images. And understanding light, as we've said, is at the heart of successful photography. And the lecture that I gave on Sunday at the expo, basically I said to the audience, light is everything, and it is the greatest abused thing in our photography. We really don't understand it. It takes years often to understand light, and that's why we can never talk enough about it. So let's shed some light on the subject of light and how it does that. First of all, revealing shape, because it's very important to do that. Shape is probably the simplest means to identify what an object is. If you think of a human hand, a human profile, a tree, you think of a shape, and then you know what it is. You don't always need to have color or dimension. Sometimes just a simple shape will tell you what that is.
Well, I think the perfect example of that is a silhouette.
Yes, exactly. And you use light very effectively to identify, in this case, yes, a silhouette, a person. We've all seen the sunset photos with the silhouetted person standing there. And often you can even tell who that person is, especially if it's someone that you love, a friend of yours or a family member, just because they're identified by their particular shape. And light can be used very effectively to identify an object, and it makes it very real. Just simple shape alone can make something very real. One way to do that is to silhouette, as you said, the subject by using backlighting. That means that you deliberately place yourself between the subject and the light source, which might be the sun, or it might be, a city light, or or stage light, or whatever it might be. Some of the greatest stage performance photography is actually done backstage or behind the performer, and we've all seen these, highlighting the performer in a silhouette or rim lit, because with a stage light, shooting its way straight down the lens. That can be very, very effective, and shape reveals much about the subject and can be very, very effective in doing that. So you've got silhouette lighting using backlighting. You've also got rim lighting. Now, rim lighting is very similar, but what it also does, it reveals shape by illuminating the outer edge of the subject. And we've talked about
a halo.
A halo effect. Yeah. It's often used very effectively in child photography, romantic portrait photography, modeling photography, and, of course, wedding photography. I was speaking a couple of, was it last week or the week before, about my nephew's wedding?
Both weeks,
and was it? Oh, yeah, I'll stop talking about it then. But the point that I made was I was using rim lighting. I had them standing in the gateway of this beautiful location that we were on, and we hadn't moved away from it because I'd fallen in love with the rim lighting. And it was only after my nephew had saw the photographs on the back of my camera that he realized, oh, okay, I see why we're staying here so long. Rim lighting is beautiful. It really, for portraiture, it's beautiful, but can also be used for other things, of course. But because it's so beautiful on the hair, if it's bridal, then it highlights the veil and the dress, as well as, the hair, and separates the subject, and both silhouetting and rim lighting separate the subject from the background. And as we've also said in this podcast, one of the greatest victims in our photography is the subject. I think the greatest victim of our bad photography is the subject. We try to say, here's what I'm taking a picture of, and very rarely, or very often rather, we fail. Rim lighting and silhouetting can be very effective in removing or separating, rather, the subject from the background or the context. You still see the context, but because you've outlined the shape of this person, then you've said, well, here it is, and they really, here's the subject, look at this, and it really stands out. So try that. I was showing some photographs to my mum here last night, and she was saying, oh, how do you do that? And I was showing her these rim-lit photographs of my nephew's wedding.
Yep.
And she said, oh, so you've actually got the sun in front of you, not behind you. And I said, yes. And she said, oh, because, you know, we were always taught, you know, when I was, mm-hmm. you know, young, that you should have the sun behind you. And I said, yeah, Mum, that's why you've got photographs of us kids all squinting with our hands up. You know, the torture. Because you had the light behind you and it was directly in our eyes. But it was also because, you know, the old school was that, one, you shouldn't silhouette. And the lenses didn't have the coatings on them that prevented flare and, you know, and they also and boosted contrast. You know, the coating now helps with the contrast issues when you backlight someone or rim light someone. So she learned the lesson that now you can. Once upon a time you should have the sun behind you, but that's old stuff and it no longer applies. Rim lighting and backlighting highlights shape, and that's a very, very powerful thing. It's a simple thing to do, but what I really like is everybody in the next, you know, to take these four things, and if you've got time this week, get your camera out, even if it's only for a few minutes, go somewhere, find a source of light, and use it to reveal the shape of something, and see how that works. Rim light a portrait, you know, get your hand and take a picture of it. Do whatever you've got to do to see how light reveals shape, and it's a simple project, a simple experiment, but it will teach you a lot about this particular aspect of light and how you can use it to highlight the subject, because that's really what we're talking about, using light to highlight, to give greater depth and meaning to the subject. If you then you combine this technique with minimal background detail by
rule of thirds.
Rule of thirds, you know, strong composition.
Leading lines.
And minimal depth of field, you've got a very, very powerful photograph. And all you've done is use light to reveal shape, either by silhouetting or rim lighting. So that's part one. Next week, stay tuned. Same bat time, same bat channel. We're going to talk about light to reveal form. So we're going to take the two-dimensional thing of shape, and we're going to make it three-dimensional. How do you do that? Because, of course, ultimately a picture is two-dimensional. So how do you reveal form and make your subject appear three-dimensional using light? So we're going to talk about that in our next podcast. So stay tuned, folks. There's so much more going on here than just crap, point, giggle, end, right? There's so much more going on here at Shutters Inc.
That's right. Excellent. Okay, mate. Well, thank you.
My pleasure. Good to talk to you again, Bruce.
Likewise.
And thanks, everybody, for coming by the stand and saying hello. And, you know, it was really good to see you. Thanks, everybody, for staying tuned to Shutters Inc. And go out and get some prints made. I'm telling you, it's really good stuff.
Absolutely.
All right, mate. Talk with you next week.
You bet. See you soon. Bye.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.